Hey, what's up, everybody? It's your boy, Christopher Terrence Jones. Welcome to another episode of the Christopher Terrence Jones Show. Can we talk? How are you doing? Hope you guys are doing well. Once again, make sure that you are staying in the house so that you're staying safe and staying healthy. Make sure you wash your hands. Make sure you use social distancing. This is the time for that. So y'all know all of that. Thank you for doing that. I appreciate you guys. Now, make sure you go ahead and share this podcast because you want to have your friends listen to this. If they haven't gotten to it, I have an amazing guest that's here today. And I want you guys to share because everybody needs to hear about him all across the country, not just in the Bay Area, everywhere. They need to hear about him. Don't forget, subscribe if you're on Apple Podcasts, iHeart, all of that. Subscribe and don't forget to rate the show. Leave a comment too. That's amazing. You guys are wonderful. Everybody, welcome Mr. Dwayne Akins to my show. Do you like being called Junior too?
Yes. I don't want to give my dad none of the credit.
Oh. Dwayne Akins Jr. We're going to make sure that we give him all of his just due and not give any to his father today because it's all about him, right?
Correct.
So, you guys, I met Dwayne a couple of years ago, and he's just an amazing person. And y'all know I totally forgot about him when I was looking for to up my ante so that I would have podcasts in the reserve so I didn't have to keep recording each week. And I kind of take a break while we're on this break. And I was like, oh, my God. And he hit me up, and I was like, oh, yes, let me get him in. And put him in here because you guys need to know about him. So he founded, along with two other guys, a company, nonprofit organization called We Lead Ours. And this was founded back in 2010, along with Lamont Robinson and Treston D. George. Is that how you say his name? Treston?
Correct. Yep.
Treston D. George. Okay. So they are a nonprofit organization based here in Northern California in the Oakland area, and it's all about helping the youth and building and developing youth. And enrichment programs, they do after-school programs, they're here to help build their self-esteem and teach them how to be respectable young people in this world, and we need that. So we want to talk to him today and let him give you more about what they do and so that you guys get a gist. So how about you start off with telling us your bio? Tell us how you started and what inspired you to do it.
So pretty much I moved back to Oakland after Hurricane Katrina hit. I had just graduated from Xavier University of Louisiana with a degree in psychology, minor in special ed. I was working as a marketing consultant for Ebb Networks offline magazine. And those things that I learned, it really helped when I got here to Oakland because I was able to just get out there and network a little bit, start working. I started volunteering with the Red Cross and pretty much end up getting a job with Sports for Kids through the work I was doing at Red Cross. And while doing the work, for Sports for Kids, I was teaching PE at a SIN school, which is the old Dewey Academy on Fruitvale. And I started a boys group there called Men at Power Strategically. And it was a group of 14 young men, seven other kids that was considered knuckleheads, and seven that was considered just like on point. These kids were definitely going to go to college, etc. So we started a male leadership program. And what I noticed, based on when I went to school in Oakland Unified School District up until this point, is that a lot of the soft skill learning was being taken away, more so because technology was being inserted into the schools. Kids didn't know how to problem solve, don't know how to agree to disagree, a little fragile, sensitive, and stuff like that. And while working as a physical education instructor, I knew that I wanted to definitely impact my community in a positive way. I wanted to make sure that I worked with youth, especially young men that were from inner cities that don't really have a lot of resource to mentors or to connections, because I strongly believe if you're interested in being a doctor and I put a doctor that looks like you in front of you, then you're seeing somebody that looks like you, you're seeing somebody model being a doctor. Therefore, you're more so likely to be like, I can do this. I can get to that point. I can make some things happen or whatnot. And after working as a PE teacher, I worked at several different schools, several different nonprofits. And I was like, you know what? I'm gonna get my MBA. And so, because I was like, I want to start my own business, but I don't want to crash a company. I want to make sure that we're able to grow and we're able to develop. So I ended up going to University of Phoenix in 2007. And I graduated in 2009 with my master's in business administration. Pitching my first contract for my program at for my Men at Power Strategic Program at Reach Academy. I got on there. And then in January of 2010, I end up linking up with Lamont Robinson, who we graduated from Oakland Tech together. And he brought Treston to the meeting, Treston George. They played football at San Jose State together. And we met at Lucas the first Tuesday of 2010. I brought my master's of business administration presentation to the table. They brought their sports piece to the table. And we combined it, walked away from there saying where we lead ours. And I was eager to flex the muscle because I just got the MBA. So I was like, let me see if I can do this paperwork. So we pushed our paperwork, got through there really quick. By the time March came, we was a nonprofit organization. 2 years later, we was our own 501c3 entity. And what really motivated me was seeing the number of kids that was coming through the ranks of my family and then working at Reach Academy, which is the old E. Morris Cox. I went to that school as in elementary. So I went there when it was E. Morris Cox.
And, stop right there. You went to E. Morris Cox?
I went to E. Morris Cox. I was class of 93 or 94, nice, like that, 92 something.
And I'm a lot older than you. I went to E. Morris Cox.
I think everybody from East Oakland went to E. Morris Cox at some point in time.
I went there many years ago. Okay.
Yeah. So when I got there and was doing my first contract, I realized that a lot of kids that I was working with, these were kids, I was friends with their parents or their parents was friends with family members of mine. So it became a little more personal. And just knowing what I learned in my master's program, I understood that we were a smaller nonprofit organization, that we wasn't going to get the shine that the national nonprofits get. So we was going to have to be very creative. So I made a promise to myself early on to always do fundraising and be willing as the executive director and co-founder, be willing to not reward yourself early on. And eventually that will catch up because you got to get people excited about your mission. You got to get people excited about being on your team. And sometimes that means you may get X amount of dollars, but you got to make sure that you pay your people and you take a little bit and stuff like that. So really learning how to be a 1099 educational contractor, align our business with other entities that are doing similar work.
Okay, tell everybody what a 1099 is before we, because I can answer that question. So tell them that.
So this might actually be important. So a 1099 is anybody that works as a contractor where they don't take taxes out of your check. And so they give you your your 1099 and you fill that out. And it's kind of like some of the general contractors, somebody that may work independently as an electrician, education enrichment provider. You can be a 1099 working as a therapist or something like that. And everybody needs to go to the small business federal website, because if you are a 1099 and classified, they're looking at individual people as small businesses too. So you're pretty much your own business when you're a 1099. The only thing you didn't do is file for your business because you're using your own social, but you're working in 1099. But you can be a 1099 working as your own business as well. So if I want to be DNA consultants, I can go and start up my go to City of Oakland, get my business license, and use that tax ID that they give me, and that becomes my 1099 income. And okay. So when you file taxes, you will file under that as well as file under your own social if you got any W-2 style money coming in. So that's what a 1099 contractor is. And I tell a lot of educators this too, that this day and age, we have to be social entrepreneurs and we have to start thinking about how do we impact the education system? What can we do that's a little bit different? So if you're in education and you really want to work with youth with autism, right? And you realize that, wait, I took out all these student loans and I really don't want to, I don't want to struggle. But you can still be an educator to people with autism. Figure out exactly what you want to do for that community. Start your own business. Work as a contractor. You may be one of those people that you don't want to be at the same school all the time, but you may got a gift. Create your own enrichment program. Pitch it to 20 different schools. You might get 5 contracts out the deal. So that's 5 different checks that you get each month. So some enrichment contractors make more money than a classroom teacher. So it's very important to figure out a way that we make educators and social work sexy too. It can be as sexy as the STEAM field. You can be very creative in the education space and stuff like that. So I knew early on that leadership, soft skills, helping young people make better decisions is what I want to do. And so I was like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to start my own business. And I took a gamble. We started with $500. Like, and we host our first summer camp. 10 years later, we're gearing up to do a summer camp, but it looks like this summer we go not be able to do a summer camp. So we'll probably just do some summer activities with the kids that are in my house other than that. And we won't be able to do our Bay Area Seminole sports program at the moment, our football program. We have to cancel our rec league basketball program that was about to jump off the same weekend Oakland got put on shutdown. So,
oh, wow.
And our after-school program is not running right now, but we do have online chess class going on for the kids that were signed up for chess. So Berkeley School of Chess is working with those kids online so that they can still develop those chess skills.
Wow. Wow. That's a lot.
Just stay busy. Stay busy.
Yeah, that is a lot. So once you decided that you guys wanted to do it, tell people, because everybody thinks stuff is so glamorous when you have a 501c. They think, oh my God, I'm going to be this. I'm going to get all of these grants. Tell people the process so that people really understand how the structure of getting grants and how starting a 501c is not the glorification that they think it is.
Right. So starting a 501c3, first off, it's a lot of paperwork just to get through that part of it. Now, before we go into that piece, say, for example, if you wanted to do something that was charitable, but you didn't want to do the 501c3, right? You can do a business, you can do a regular business that's a profitable business, right? Mm-hmm. But you can team up with somebody like me who have a 501c3, and we can become your fiscal agent, and we can go after grants to support your charitable idea. Because
yeah.
some people not good for the charity space. They really profit people. And so if you're in the charitable space, you got to understand that there are certain things that you're not going to get paid for. Like, it's certain speaking engagements that I go to that I'm not going to get paid for. Just because, dude, you work in philanthropy. You work in the space. You're supposed to give back. You're supposed to participate. Right. But then there's times where I have gotten a check for going out to speak and to do something. And sometimes it's been a very good surprise. But it takes a while to get to the point. You have to position yourself to network. You have to align yourself with other groups that are similar to parts of your mission so that you can navigate different positions. For example, one of the biggest things that happened to me was when we were in our last year at Reach Academy doing our after school program, Keep Oakland Beautiful. They were announcing a community project at Verdes Carter Park. And so they came over to the school. And since we were running an after school program, my kids and us, we got invited to participate and to partner. And our kids, we had a boys step team and a girls step team, so they were the talent entities. And we also did our summer camp at Reach Academy that summer. And through that relationship with Keep Oakland Beautiful, we end up getting a big green bus to come up to our summer camp. And pretty much our camp got blasted on Fox Network. So it was like, that was like a publicity endorsement. I had folks that I went to school with that were on the East Coast, like Facebooking me like, Dwayne, we just seen you on TV. Like, you really out there doing it. And then getting a Xavier 40 Under 40 Young Alumni Award, that was really substantial. Then joining the board of directors to Keep Oakland Beautiful was really good, because I was living in East Oakland at Sobrandy Park, and it was kind of like, I'm from that community, from the Deep East, and it was kind of like I was moving in my own lane at that point. Nobody in East Oakland that was a black male was really hitting the community the way that I was hitting the community, working in parks, cleaning up streets, working directly with kids. So it put me in kind of like an area by myself. So I became attracted to boards. They was like, we need you on our board. Can you join our board? And what I know about business and networking, yes, I can join that board, because when I looked around the table at the Keep Oakland Beautiful board, who's the nonprofit at the table? Dwayne, we lead ours. And you got to position yourself as a young nonprofit to be at the table, to know people, to get into different situations. I served on the board of directors of Keep Oakland Beautiful for 6 years. That led me to get on the board of directors for Oakland Parks and Rec Foundation, as well as becoming the commissioner for the city of Oakland for Parks and Recreation. So these are things that I didn't think that I'll be doing. But through the work that I've done in the community, and by being so active, involved in the parks and cleaning them up and getting people out to beautification projects through our We Cycles for Us program that we do. We do Earth Day, we do Creek to Bay Day, we do Martin Luther King Jr. Day, and then we do one big day in the summer where we have community folks, businesses come out, and they work pretty much in the Royal Park. We also did some stuff at the lake and some other places in the city of Oakland. So all of these things, it kind of, our brand, it didn't start in green space, but our brand, it has been youth leadership, sports physical education, civic engagement through direct service. And we just try to align with other groups that are doing similar work so that it helps us, it helps them, everybody win. We do a great job partnering with other nonprofit organizations, because we may have something that they grant cause for, but they don't have the personnel to do it. But they like, WeLo, can y'all send us a contractor? Sure, we can send you a contractor. And what that does is basically, we have different folks out there working for different companies that's writing these crazy grants. They winning on the grant scene. We don't have the capacity for a grant writer unless I sit down and write the grant or get a volunteer to write the grant. So therefore, these contractual wins for us. However, in the era of coronavirus, we got to be a little bit different about how we're going about that, because some of those folks that were partners with us, they are outside in the community like us providing direct service. So now their services are going to shift. So they're going to be using their people to do Zoom enrichment classes and stuff. So now WeLo is going to have to step up, and we're going to have to figure out how to use the internet and the social media to support our young folks. The work we do with the Oakland Unified School District is the Substance Abuse Harm Reduction Program. And we have shifted to the online platform. And what we're doing now is we're actually going to be shooting our first podcast next weekend. So it's going to actually be talking about coronavirus effects on addiction as well as on the African community. So pretty much, you know, the Great Depression times, drinking and everything went up, people committing suicide. I predict that we're going to see some of those same trends happen now, especially if our president don't get those checks out to people like they supposed to. Been here, right, this week, but I don't think, have you seen yours come in the mail? But I've seen mine.
No, I haven't found that one.
Right, that's a whole other thing though, but we're going to start seeing some of those things. So as a business leader, and a community leader, I want to make sure that I'm already in front of that situation before it just come and slap us in the face and we're dealing with it. So far, since we've been out of school, I've had the support several of my young people that's on my caseload through the substance abuse harm reduction work with food and groceries and stuff like that. Thank God for the cash apps and stuff like that, so you don't have, you can still practice the social distancing, shoot them money and stuff like that. The other thing is supporting these young people that are seniors right now that's supposed to be graduating, and they're living in households where people don't understand technology. Like, because technology is different from having a social media account. Like, when you actually got to open up Google, log into the Oakland Unified School District portal, help your child find the Google Classroom and stuff like that, and you never even used Banner Web in college. So you are in a whole nother space, and we have to make sure that we're able to support those services. So right now, I'm thankful that we still able to have contractors working on the substance abuse harm reduction grant in a different creative way versus the way that we were doing it already.
Now, I'm not going to let you slide over that, because you tried to slide over that nonprofit stuff. We're going to build this thing up. We're going to build it. You tried to slide on past. I want you to tell the people, because everybody thinks that having a nonprofit, they really think that it's glamorous. And you just showed us that it's not glamorous. But, okay, so did you file all of your paperwork yourself? Did you, because you have this wonderful MBA, you're an educated man, did you do the paperwork yourself?
I did the regular business part, the first part of the business, getting your business. So the steps is, first, whatever city you're going to operate out of, you got to go to that city hall, you got to set up your paperwork, file your fictitious business name, licensing, do all of that stuff. You have to go and get your vendor license and stuff like that. And then once you get all those paperwork, you have to go to your state Secretary of State website page. You got to download the articles of incorporation. You fill that paper out exactly like that. If you read the directions, that part's simple. You send that back. I think it was at that time $150. They send you the letter back, and they either tell you you did it correctly or you did it wrong. First time, we missed one word, so we have to send it back and we have to pay again. And we got it right that time, and then we were listed as a nonprofit organization without the 501c3. The 501c3 application is very thick. It's very long. So we end up getting a lawyer to fill out the 501c3 portion for us. So we had an independent lawyer. He did the paperwork for $500, submitted. He got it wrong. He got one or two things wrong the first time he submitted it. And so then what we did is I looked at what he got wrong, I edited it, and then we pushed our paperwork back through, and then I got on the phone and I blew up Ohio, got the dude on the phone that was over it, like, did you get our papers yet? And he developed kind of like a relationship, a friendship with me over the phone, and was like, I'm looking for y'all stuff. He got our stuff, and he called me and was like, maybe like 2 weeks after that, he called me and said, you can officially call yourself 501c3. And I was like, okay. But it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work. I would definitely encourage people to pay a consultant to fill out that application, somebody that like to do that level of work, because you always want to make sure that you're able to promote your mission and vision. And when you start have to do things that are the operational part, that it supports the mission and vision, but you more of that worker, you like to be out there, you like to be in the community, you have to type all that paperwork, it stops you from being the worker, and you don't get to be out in the community. So leveraging in the Bay Area, we're fortunate because we have all these tech companies with all of these giving programs, right? Yeah. But if you don't get out there and network, you won't know about them, right? If you don't build up your volunteer base. And so we've had a lot of folks from Salesforce, Google step up and help us with things that we don't know how to do. TechSoup give us a lot of discounts for since we're not nonprofit 501c3, we qualify for TechSoup discounts. So for Zoom, for example, you know, it costs $100 and some for the pro. I just paid $69 for the pro. So we got it for a super great discount. Up to 9 people can be on there and 100 and all the same pro features. But that's a way that the nonprofit stuff supports. You have Catch a Fire, which is a platform for...
Before you go to Catch a Fire, so I want the people at home to listen, because y'all, we he said in the beginning he wanted to make sure that he got the accolades. And that's why I took him back to that start of this nonprofit stuff. As you heard him say, it's a lot of work he went through. He started the first piece of it. He got the business piece done, and then they hired an attorney. An attorney, y'all heard that. And the attorney did not get it right. He went back, Dwayne Atkins Jr. Y'all hear? Y'all want y'all to get that, because it's about elevating him today. We're going to talk about him today. He went back and he edited it and got it right so that it could pass, so they were able to get all of the documentation that they needed. Now, many years ago, y'all know I used to work for a consulting company. And what did I do every day? I went to the state capitol and filed everybody's nonprofits. So I'm well versed in that. It is a horrible thing to have to do if that is not your calling in life, but that was my job. That was the company that I was working for. And I would file 6 to 7 nonprofit applications on a daily basis. And I would sit inside the Capitol office. If one thing was wrong, I had to correct it while I was in there with whiteout or whatever and fix it, go somewhere, print it, turn it back in and get it done, because that's what people were paying the company that I was working for to do. So, but it's good money. Let me tell y'all that it's good money. It's good money. I made good money. Good money. But yeah, we want y'all to understand that he is your go-to to help you navigate through what you're trying to do. I'm bringing you the people that can do it. And he is somebody, but because he likes to go on and brash over that. He didn't want to highlight himself. So I'm going to pump his head up for him right now. I'm going to take it there. So now he can get on his tech crunch.
But you also got to make sure that you're not just looking at, I'm going to go and get this RFP style grant, right? The RFP style, that's your federal grant. Now, some people can go after the federal grant, but if you only got 3 people working for your nonprofit and you go after a federal grant and you get it, highly likely you're not going to get renewed, because you won't have the bandwidth or the capacity to execute the grant, because you need to be able to hire somebody to do that paperwork. Because that, it's all about paperwork with the federal grant. Now, a smart, small nonprofit, you're going to go after contractual dollars, and you're going to go after sponsorships, and you're going to go after multiple small grants each month. So what I do for WeLo is each month I go after at minimum $2,500, because all of our programs are contracted out. So that means we got a grant for the Oakland Unified School District. We sit on that grant. So OUSD, they go after that money. And if we meet our deliverables, we'll be invited back to participate on the grant. So we got OUSD team assuring that we have money as long as we take care of business. Then we have our after school program, which is $0 to $355 a month at North Oakland Community Charter School. So the reason why it costs at the independent charter school, because they don't get federal dollars to pay after school enrichment coordinators. So they have to provide their own after school program. And then we have the Bay Area Seminoles sports program, which is our football, our tackle football. We're in the Snoop Youth Development League. That's $0 to $350 and $0 to $500 if you're doing the cheerleader part, because their stuff costs a little bit more. And those things, after school and the sports piece, those are indirectly 2 fundraisers that's going on basically for the org. So for after school, for example, we have to close the books on the 13th. We had raised enough money to even some of our folks that was waiting for the Oakland Unified School District check to come in. We were able to pay them early because we had already generated money in the cash coffer from the after school to where we can be all right for a certain amount of time as a nonprofit. Many nonprofits, if they just went been going after the federal grants, and what happened when your buddy that was helping you out in the feds don't work for the feds no more, and you get a new person there, and they like, I'm going to give the organizations that I'm familiar with, and so your company just lost $1 million contract. And so you got to be very smart about when you're going after the RFP money. Do you have the capacity and the bandwidth to make sure that they're going to continue to give you the money? Or do you need to, for this specific project, is that federal grant going to stop you and make you be like, I don't even like this job no more? Because when you get out of bed each morning, you want to make sure you like the work that you do. You know, like, I love getting up and going to one of these school sites and saying, I work for We Lead Ours, that I'm here representing my company. And I don't think even if I get in, turn into a six-figure guy or a seven-figure guy, that I would stop working the outside parts of the program, my summer camps and stuff like that. I would not stop doing it because I created a job for myself. Like, so yeah, I'm executive director, but I didn't create the executive director role to just be inside the office at 55 Santa Clara typing up papers. I created my education widget and leadership piece and the contribution that I want to give back to social science. And
so what's your favorite program that you actually like working with? Is it the football? Is it the after school program? Is it the mentoring? Which piece? Because to tell us what piece that works.
I love our mentor. I think our company, our greatest program is our mentor leadership program. And so we just kicked off our mentor on the fly program for male and females. And so this is for the young ladies, it's 8 through life. For the young men, it's 10 through life. We have our...
You said 10 through life?
10 through life. 10 through life.
So if they're 80 and 90 years old, you still do mentoring programs?
So it's 10 through life because hopefully when they get to that age, they come back and they work at WeLo in some capacity. But I say 10 through life is because so many times, we talked about it earlier, our kids don't have access to professionals. So when you're in college, I want to be able to give you some professionals that's going to either help you get an internship, guide you, or whatnot. So a true story, one of my young men that was one of my interns, he went to Bishop O'Dowd. He went to Oregon State at first. He didn't like it. He called me and was like, Dwayne, can you please help me tell my mom that she needs to let me go to Xavier University of Louisiana? And so what I was able to do being an alumni, and he's a chemistry major, and he's finishing his senior year right now. He was able to get on the phone with one of my friends that's a practicing dentist. He was able to get on the phone with an MD and meet some different people that graduated from there that are successful in the pathway that he's interested in, and put them in contact with mom. And then I was able to call a university, get somebody that was on site, that was there when I was on site, to meet them, give them a guided tour, and talk to them about the school and make her feel comfortable about sending her son to Louisiana. And we still mentor this kid, this young man. And the cool thing, when I was in New Orleans in November, the first night before my hotel room got ready, I slept at this young man's house. And so I was like, this is pretty cool. This is one of your young adults that is doing something successful for themselves. Another thing is, one of my early kids that I taught physical education for, he's Asian. When I worked with him at the eighth grade, his name Cal, he was super awesome. He ended up going to Tech, then went to Berkeley. But when I joined my fraternity in 2006, he was in the eighth grade. He got to Cal, and he helped start his own Asian fraternity. And he brought me in to pretty much support and mentor his fraternity brothers. because, and so, and we still have a deep relationship. And so that's why it's through life, because the whole thing is, I would love to see my nonprofit, we have hubs throughout the United States. And if I have a kid that's at in New York University and they don't want to come back to the Bay Area, what happens if I had a hub in Brooklyn or something like that? And you can come work there in your capacity and give back into while you're trying to figure out exactly what you want to do after life. And eventually I want to make sure that I'm able to, like, if you're in college and the loans are saying that you got to take $20,000 out in student loans in undergrad, I want to be in a position eventually to do the level of philanthropy, like, you can take the grants, I'm going to cover your loan balance. Because I want individuals being able to not be, I'm sick of hearing kids, especially from the hood, say, I don't want to go to a university because I don't want to be in debt and stuff like that. So I'm totally sick of hearing that. I'm sick of really black young men saying that, feeling like education is not for them, feeling like it's not cool to be smart. It is cool to be smart. It's not cool to stay on your mama's couch for the rest of your life. It's not cool to be a tennis shoe pimp, pimping the young ladies on East 14 and stuff like that. So I want to make sure that my nonprofit is getting in front of those uncomfortable conversations. And I also want to make sure that we're providing a level of leadership that's real and authentic, and to where we're not pacifying our young men. Like, really, because sometimes I see some of these therapists at some of the schools I work at, and they just coddle with our African-American young men, and they treat them like they can't really do it. And I'm like, that person is capable of doing the work. That person just need to be challenged, and you need to stop cradling them. They're not a baby. What happens when you go away and they don't have nobody to coddle them anymore? Like, you shouldn't be buying your grown son or your grown husband some jorts every month. You should be doing that only on their birthday.
Oh.
If they like shoes like that. They should be buying their own jorts every month if that's a part of it. How do you got every new pair of jorts, but you ain't even got a job?
Oh.
I own a company, and I don't got no jorts in my closet. I got some hard soles, though. But the mentality shift, it has to change, and I want to make sure that my organization handles that. Another thing we got to talk about is the use of marijuana. We got to talk about how my mom was on crack cocaine when I was in elementary, when I was in middle school, when I was in high school.
Oh, wow.
How is it that my mom was on crack cocaine? I had a haircut every Friday. I had breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And I didn't miss no days of school. And she was at the parent-teacher conferences.
So she was a functioning crackhead.
I don't even think she was functioning. I think that it was just an old school mentality, like education is important.
Wow.
And being raised by older women, like, education is important. And I have to question, like, what the hell is in the marijuana? If what's the hell in the marijuana or liquor, if my mom was on crack cocaine and people didn't believe it unless I said, like, my mom do drugs.
Wow.
Because we didn't have those conversations. Oh, you lying? My mom on welfare. You lying? Y'all don't get no welfare. Yes, we get a welfare check. But something is wrong when you have these young ladies that, and maybe it's because we have had a community gap where a lot of our young ladies didn't see males in their house. So now they focused on chasing the dude instead of taking care of their kid and stuff like that. So again, my mom, she was on crack cocaine. She never brought a dude home that did crack cocaine, and she never brought a lazy dude in front of her son. So I would say that we have some society things that are going on and some social economic things that's going on that has stopped our community from growing, feeling like we're capable of doing this. Like, especially black folks, we pretty much the pioneers of everything in the United States. We taught everybody, like, how to build this, how to create that, and we don't get the credit for it, and we don't praise ourselves enough for it. I was talking about the civil rights movement and we're in a new age of civil rights. And so while this coronavirus thing is going on, it's sad, it's devastating, but right now, all of our leaders, anybody with a microphone in front of them, they need to be arguing and communicating for our community. How is Black people going to benefit from everything that's happening right now? And what happens is our Black leaders go to bat, and it's always under a huge diversity lens, and we get a fragment of the support after we just went to bat. Like the number of African Americans that got killed walking across the bridge in Alabama, the Black people that got killed, the college kids that got beat at the Greensboro cafeteria, at the famous sit-ins, right? That's the reason why everybody can walk in the front door at McDonald's. So
exactly,
we don't get the credit for a lot of stuff, and we're treated less than. And so until we start inspiring our folks to be like, hey, feel good about yourself. You a king, you not a nigga. Can I say that word on here? But
yes,
like, and you a queen, you a queen, not a bitch. Like, so until we start having those real life conversations with our young people, we're missing the mark, and we can't be scared to mentor them. They thirsty for it. They just coming up through a different cultural lens and a different social media lens than what we all came up through and stuff like that. So if we can reach out to them and give them some hugs and some high fives and some praises and bring them a little closer to us, then they'll start catching on. Cause I believe that you have to be shown what success look like in order to grab onto it and run away with it. And you got some people who see success, but they so scared to take it that they going to do something else. Like, I got a lot of buddies that grew up in fancy homes, two-parent households, who ain't doing crap. And I'm like, you was set up to win. Your parents had you a college fund set up, and you decide to go out there and steal cars and do whatever, end up going to San Quentin. Like, come on now.
I grew up with a lot of those, and I look back and I'm like, well, wow, our paths, we were on the same path, and I'm looking at them now and I'm like, okay, how did you end up there? We went to the same school and we did the same things, and now you're there and I'm this direction, and I'm like, did you say I'm bougie? And I'm like,
do you know the definition of bougie?
You were the same way. Your parents was the same way. Your mama was driving the big Cadillacs when Cadillacs was the thing to do. Your mother was in the DeVille. Your mother had everything. So how did you end up here?
Right. And that's what it comes up to. Like, being comfortable with having nice things and working towards nice things is something that we should all feel like we can have that.
And like, the work to it. It costs to live where I live. It's not cheap to live here. I have to bust my butt because this is right. California, and it really takes 2 and 3 incomes to live here. You just it can't does. Get away with one. You just can't get away with one.
It does. I really believe that we're in the era of Barack Obama talked about it when he first was running for president, and he talked specifically, and I don't know how many people was listening, but he talked about what was about to happen. And he was like, everybody needs to figure out how to make money for yourself. You have to have a side hustle. Your gifts have to work for you.
Yes.
And so that was right before I got into my own contractor work. And I told my homeboys, I was like, look, many of us who grew up here are not gonna be living in Oakland anymore. That's what he was talking about. All this new development stuff that we see now, he was talking about it in 2008. It was just only certain people was listening. And sometimes it takes to have a business mind to hear things and be like, okay, I got to get on that. And my first MBA class at University of Phoenix, my first professor, he said, Dwayne, where do you stay? I said, on 85th. He said, you take the BART? I said, yeah. He said, look at the poles. What's different about the poles? And I said, they just painted them. What's happening over there redevelopment, right? He said, if they change in the color of the poles in the hood and they pave in the streets, gentrification is coming next. Urban development is coming next.
It's coming. Right?
And so you have to have your nose to the street so that you can be able to pivot and evolve in all of this stuff that's going around. And it sucks that a lot of folks aren't positioned to be successful right now in the Bay Area. But right now, you have to be on your social.
I disagree with you a little bit on that, because I don't feel bad for some of them, because some of them, the tools were given to them. They just chose not to use them.
Right. So
tools were given, because even before, like I say, I'm older than you, when there was all kind of programs when I went to school, when I lived in Oakland, and like I said, I went to Morris Cox, I went to Westlake, I went to Oakland High, I went to Claremont. So I went to school in Oakland because I grew up in Oakland. The tools were there for you mm-hmm. to go out and say, I'm doing this next and I'm going to elevate to this. People just chose not to use some of the tools, and they decided that they wanted to go a different route. Now, there's time for you to go play off on that little route.
Right.
And you still could have came back and got yourself back on track. And some of them still didn't do that, because it's never too late to turn your situation around. It's never.
I agree with you. Like, I remember early on when I was at Morris Cox, and many people will not see this image of Castlemont. Remember the parade that they used to have around the whole Castlemont, like horse and carriage? It was like being at an HBCU. You had the marching band, the drill teams, and all of this stuff. And I remember those times as a young kid, and I was just like, I cannot wait to go to Castlemont. I got there my freshman year. We were in portables, and I was like, this is depressing. Like,
they had a parade. See, that's something I didn't know about that.
Yeah, but it was kind of like the programs got cut. So when you were in school, y'all had a lot of stuff to help y'all become social and whole. And I feel like I graduated in class 2000. I feel like class of 2002 was kind of like the last class to get a lot of that stuff. And I feel like now what we see going on is we don't see, especially a lot of our kids whose parents are not super involved, we don't see them getting that oomph that they need. And another thing is we reward negative behavior, right? If Johnny can't read, Johnny shouldn't be going to the third grade. He should stay in the second grade for another year.
But even, right? Even not that, so because I agree with you on that, but it's not just the school's fault. Because I've been driving the school bus for 32 years, and when I used to drive at Berkeley Unified, I had a kid that was so bad, the teachers and the principals did not want him in the school. They were trying to get him out. The mother and father were separated. But the father comes to the school bringing this little boy brand new shoes. Why are you bringing brand new shoes and your child is terrorizing the school?
Right.
He is the terror of this whole entire, even the principal scared of the kid. And you bringing him new shoes. Why?
It was this little girl on Facebook, her little video went viral, and she was talking about how parents, you ain't got no choice but to watch your kids right out. And the last part, she said, how about you teach your kids how to act?
Yes.
So when they go back to school, and you do see that, you see parents rewarding negative behavior. Like,
and no, I feel sorry for them here, parents right now.
Take that PlayStation. Take the PlayStation, put it away. But that's the thing that we have to do. We have to make sure that we don't reward negative behavior, and that we also start keeping it real and 100 in our African American community. And I'm gonna speak.
Kids is bad. That's the they bad. Right. That's the real. Right. Your little badass kids.
Because we do something in our African American community where we reward fast money. So. Fast money sent you out there pimping, selling drugs, doing whatever side hustle you're doing, and you break in the elders off in the family. Mm-hmm. So man,
look it.
You not, but those elders, they'll put their house on whatever, on probate, whatever they got to do to get you out of jail. But then they got other kids and young folks coming through the ranks and they ain't doing nothing for them because they're not out there making the fast money. So we got to start talking about some of those issues, like backwards mindset, need versus wants, basically. Like, now,
do you, in your mentoring of the kids, do you encourage them and let them know that voting is a major thing?
Yes. Yeah, they always, especially when I walk on the school sites, they always see me in my sticker. You follow me on social media, I'm always posting something about politics, telling people they got to go and vote and stuff like that. I would love to do a little bit more in the voter push, because I feel like a lot of people in the Bay Area feel like they vote don't really count. And because we get counted super late. And so some people just don't go to vote. But I would love to do a little bit more outreach, especially with the census right now. I did sign up to participate in being one of the census workers, but due to all this stuff going on, all I can do is promote.
Yeah, from
sign
from
up,
home.
Promote the website, sign up and stuff like that. But I try to model it for all the young people that I work with to talk about voting, utilizing your voice. And I also talk to them about joining commissions. Like, anybody can go on the City of Oakland website or whatever city you in, see the open commission seats, and fill it out. All you have to do is be a registered voter and interested in one of those commissions. I know the City of Oakland, you pick three commissions that you're interested in. The mayor team look at all applications. When a seat come available, they go through them and they see who's the best fit. And then they put it to the city council. They do an up or down vote. Then you get an email saying that you have been nominated and approved, and here's the first commission date. Do you want it, basically? So it's pretty interesting, pretty cool. And just when you have a seat at the table, you can do a little bit more and you can learn a lot. Like, because there's things that I've learned by sitting at the table of the commission versus being a member of Organizing for Action and being in a fraternity and running my own community nonprofit. When you sit at the commission table, you start looking at the policies and what's going on. But when you're in these community spaces, you can sometimes just be like, action, rapid fire, this is what we gonna do. But then when you get in the political space, you see the process. So learning how to merge those two things together to make it work for your best interest and for your constituents is very important. And that's the one reason why I'm working on over this time is the Time to Dig Deep consulting website, is because I think it's totally time to give back, to work with other individuals that are interested in starting their own nonprofits, their own small businesses, and just pretty much helping other people.
Okay, so tell us about Time to Dig Deep .com.
TimeToDigDeep.com. That's my own personal project. So that's pretty much, I've been doing this level of work, community service and nonprofit boards for the past 10 years and just urban development and stuff. And so now this is my time to position myself as an individual brand, get more on the speaking circuit, more on the facilitator circuit. I would love to go into higher ed in some kind of capacity, maybe be a guest lecturer or something like that, and pretty much work with individuals that's similar to some of these things. And then I didn't take out all those student loans to be broke. So now it's time to start doing some things that's going to set me up for that 40 plus years in my life to where I'd be like, I own that. So that's what I'm looking at. I take this time in this social distancing space. How do you use all of the lemons that's being tossed at you and not just sit there and catch the lemons, but how do you make lemonade out of them? How do you figure out how is this going to be a good time? What I've done each day since being on quarantine is I've gotten dressed. I'm not sitting in the house and not going to get dressed. I'm going to get dressed even though I have nowhere to go. Nothing's open, but I'm still going to get dressed and I'm still going to get my hair cut and I'm still going to feel good about myself.
You can get your hair cut. Ain't no haircut.
Yeah.
That's not essential. Oh, yeah, unless you cut it yourself.
Yeah, cut it myself, get lined up, keep face lined up and stuff like that, just to make sure that you're having fun. But also, my 17-year-old nephew is here with me. So making sure, connect with him, making sure he's staying motivated because he's supposed to graduate this year. But we don't even know what's happening with the graduation stuff. So just making sure that I can be here in that capacity and stay positive and just being optimistic. And I believe right now is the time for everybody to start thinking about what do they do well. You might fold up clothes well. I don't know. How do we make a business out of you folding up clothes? Some people hate to fold up clothes, so some people would pay you to come fold up their clothes because they hate it. You can make some money out of that. So everybody, I believe, is their own business brand. They just got to tap into it and figure out exactly what they like to do, what makes them happy. Because Dr. Brookover, one of my last psychology classes at Xavier, she told us, she's a white woman, and she taught at an HBCU, and many of our professors were white. And she told us,
now, is that a good thing or a bad thing?
That's a good thing. It's a good thing. It's a bad thing. I don't know. It's in between. Like, you want to have a quality professor in front of you. Do I feel like I had the best professors in undergrad? Yes. When I got to my MBA level, breezed through it. Like, it was simple. I have black professors too. It just depends on the major. A lot of psychology professors were, I think the staff was half white, half black, and a doctor level. But she did drop some gems. What she said is, you all need to stop thinking about how you're going to work for this psychology degree and how the psychology degree is going to work for you.
Exactly.
So if you look at Xavier University of Louisiana, and we have a ton of great historical black colleges, a ton of great PWIs, but I went to Xavier, so I can speak to this standpoint because I can look at my peers. And when you see the individuals that went to that university that not only work in a profession, but they have an entrepreneurial thing that they're doing on the side, and that profession is working for them and their impact in their communities. That says a lot about the university. That says a lot about the person. And Xavier, it made us each you had to do up to what? In order to graduate, I think it was like 25 community service hours. So you had to participate at some capacity in community service. Our education majors and psychology classes, you had to volunteer in some of those lanes. So I was a special education minor. So each special ed class that I took, I had pretty much 18-hour externship. So I was at the Calio Projects at school up the street from Xavier, I think Lafayette Elementary, putting in hours in mild moderate classes. So what that taught me is how to deal with chaos in the learning space very early, to whereas I don't have a credential to be a teacher, but I can walk in any classroom in OUSD and do basic attention getters, not go in there and super check or smash a kid, but just talk to them from a place of here and get them to learn. That's a trick. Well, it's not a trick, it's skill and stuff like that. So
I got skill too. I just go about it a different way.
Yeah, sometimes you got to raise your voice when you work in education. But yeah. The thing is, do the kids respect you? Do the kids respect you?
Mm-hmm, they scared
you. Yeah. Well, it's a different kind of scared. They're not scared to be like walk up to you and be like, hey, what's up, Mr. Jones? They know better to disrespect you. Those two different levels of scare. And that's why I say the kids are thirsty for mentorship. It's just some people, especially individuals that don't grow up in urban environments, and they like, oh, I'm going to go through the Teach for America program, and they're going to pay back my loans, and I'm going to go and get back to that urban hood community. And they have a preconceived notion about the kids and the families here already. So many of them can't come here because they already scared of this community. How you go work with something that you're scared of? Like, so we have to do a better job putting the right ingredients in our classrooms, because you said something earlier that was spot on. you said like you felt like there was choices and opportunities and you was connected a little bit to school and you could do something with your life afterwards. And some people made choice not to. I strongly feel like what we're seeing happen now is a lot of kids don't feel connected to the spaces in the school. And one thing that's missing is youth voice. Like, you don't have kids like the leadership team. The kids are not orchestrating, this is what our school is about to do. So they don't have a sense of pride. Like, the 17-year-old that's here, I don't think I can recall a time where he went to a school football game, his 4 years at Oakland High. And I'm like, you went to a football game. I can't recall a time where he actually go to a basketball game.
Wow.
Right? That was the thing to do when you went to one of the big six schools in OUSD. So things have changed, but he wants to be
an engineer. I wasn't even into football, and I went to football games.
Right. I believe he's going to be an engineer. But as far as, like, the school pride, like, where I was a Bulldog and go to the games and stuff like that, they're not into it. So it's it's a level of disconnect.
That's definitely disconnect, because football was the thing at Oakland High. I couldn't tell you. And shoot, it also, when I went to school, our cheerleaders were the national championships. So they had won the championship nationally for a couple of years running. So I'm like, yeah, we went, and I was I had vocals, which I still have. I sung in choir. Yeah, I was one of those choir members.
Choir kids.
And I had a block. I had my sweater. We had the school sweaters that had the block O's and everything. So, you know, we sung everywhere. So, I mean, there was a connect.
I think one thing that definitely needs to happen, I think school definitely needs to evolve with the times. I think we have kids that are not comfortable with just sitting in straight lines and rows. So we have to, if we have kids that are so on their technology, that we have to figure out how to put that all in the institution. And then I also feel like it's the right time for Black private education institutions, schools that are really for our kids. So I think the history piece, the Black history, or the American history, which is real Black history, is not taught in our public schools.
Okay. And tell us a little bit how that works. Tell us a little bit how you see that working.
I would call it Proctor Academy. And so you would have educators that are within the school space, and they're serving more as proctors. When the kid come into school space, they check out their Chromebook or whatever, and they have like a banner web, and they have all of their work that they need to complete for a different subject matter in order to graduate. Now, they can go and lay on the grass, whip open their computer, do their work. If they get struggling, they'll know that these teachers have these workshops open. So if you go in that workshop, you going in there because you're struggling with algebra, and they go tutor you in algebra, and they go, and you go in there to learn so you can know how to do the stuff independently. Ooh. Then you have like teachers who are open for individual office time, to where you have one-on-one counseling, coaching you and stuff like that. But you give kids more of kind of like learn at your own pace. And then you may have kids that I want to go to my class period each day, so they can actually go in their classroom and period to period to period. But you have more of different ways to learn, and that way you get all of the learning styles infused, because you got kids that learn from reading. You got kids that learn from actually apply, stuff like that. And the SATs and stuff need to start looking like that too, the different type of aptitudes and stuff like that. So I think it's time to get creative about education. Think about it. How many people want to go to their job at Google? My friends that work for Google love going to work.
Right.
It's different stimuli. You got different learning stimuli. You can work at all different levels of pace based on how you like to work. If you don't want to go there, you can work from home. As long as you get on there and you logged in and it's counting the time to show that you're doing your work. So
it's just it's the way the dynamics of the building is. Because it's just like Facebook. there's these areas that work, there are quiet areas, there are areas that are not quiet areas, there's over the top areas. And so it's like wherever, what section you're in the building, whatever fits for how you like to operate throughout the day.
That's right.
Good idea. That is definitely a good thing for a school, because we need to adjust with the times. But you also have to put that piece in there that we may still be at home. This we don't know what the outlook,
right,
what the outcome of this is going to be. So people may still be at home. And I felt that it's good that you said to give a Chromebook, because I've said this all along. Every child should be given some type of notebook, lapbook, iPad, tablet, something for learning, because you cannot learn without technology in your hand. Because when the teacher is not there, they still need that technology right there in front of them, because I know they want to play games on it, but it's still a whole lot of technology there that they can learn from. There's so many tools.
And they just take the monitor. You got to monitor it. You got to monitor it. Like I was telling my nephew, I was like, look, I get you want to play that game, but you got to work-life balance it out. I was like, you 17. Either when you get off of this thing, you're going to have done everything correct. I'm going to tell you that you need to do your work. Take a break. Do your work. Take a break. Time to take some lunch. Mm-hmm. But if you take that break and you don't do nothing, don't be coming to me with your lip poked out when you don't get to walk that stage. That's going to be on you, and you're going to have to go through that embarrassing moment of not walking the stage with your friends. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to the school to argue for you, because you got technology and you got access. So there's no reason why you should not do your work.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes you got to let them go through that on their own. They got to figure it out, go through it on their own. Because like I said earlier, you can't just rock them and cradle them. Real life.
He held accountable. And I saw something on Facebook, and I'm always different from everybody else, but it was basically saying that during this time of quarantine, if you don't come out with a new skill, with something, said a couple other things, and it's not that you had the lack of knowledge or the time, or that was, you just are lazy, is basically what it said to them. And that's so true, because we went out way before everybody else. My district went down because our spring break had started and stuff, like the way our schedule was. So we were out. And so I've been in the house for over a month. We was like, this is like Bobo crazy to me. But when I realized that we were going to be in the house and I wasn't going nowhere, the money that I was spending on gas, I went and paid down my credit card bills. Because I was like, I'm not going nowhere. So right now, I'm like, maybe by the time this check comes at the end of this month, because I paid aggressively on mine, because I was like, I ain't going nowhere. I ain't got nowhere to be. I put gas in my car once in this whole month. So it wasn't a big thing. I also took the time to say, okay, I'm going to learn something. So before everybody was on this Facebook talking all this stuff, I said, I'm going to learn something. So I went ahead and bought Adobe Photoshop. So I'm teaching myself, along with a couple other people, how to do Adobe Photoshop, how I can get a skill out of this thing that benefits me on the other side, because nobody knows what the outcome is going to look like.
Right.
And for me, because I also do wine tastings and I do all of that, people may not want to come out and be around a bunch of people. So let me work on my marketing skills more so I can do my own flyers, so that when I come out of this, on one side of my flyer is my podcast. On the other side is, I do wine tastings at your house. You got to be able to market, because you don't know what it's going to look like on the other side. So you got to be ready for it on all aspects of it. You got to be ready.
Correct. That's why I tell people, maybe like, how do you do all of these different things? I'm like, you got to go to work. Like, you got to go to work. You can't just be a wasted vessel just sitting around. Like, I never wanted to be that guy that's still in front of the liquor store hanging out. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want to be that dude. You 40 years old, you still hanging out at the liquor store. Must be nice. Your parents still let you just come and stay at their house. Must be nice.
That ain't nice.
That's what I'm saying.
There's so much out there in this world that,
Like, and you scared to leave off in front of the liquor store to go enjoy life. Like, Oakland is so much more in the world. The world is bigger than Oakland. Within the next 5 years, I would totally love to be in another state doing something, doing the same thing, but doing it in a different state. With this stuff that I'm doing in Oakland, still running and making money for it. Like, you have to position yourself to be, I'm going to say, in this era, definitely a social part at it in front of an entrepreneur, instead of just being an entrepreneur. Because entrepreneurs look like a lot of things. A lot of people, you think that entrepreneurs just look like these millionaires or these Elon Musk. No, entrepreneurs come in different walks of form, life form.
Yes.
Similar to sometimes when we used to do this this cultural doctor activity. So you sit with a group of elementary kids and you ask them to draw a doctor, pretty much. So you ask them, what does a doctor look like? Most times kids that are black, they draw old white men with some glasses. And so a lot of people don't understand that you can be a doctor of education. You can be a jurist doctor. A lot of people don't know that you can be a doctor with a business and stuff like that. So knowing that a doctor is a large variety and stuff like that. So,
and I think part of that is that where we live too, because they're in other areas, in other states and stuff like that. So especially down south, they see nothing but black doctors. They see black scientists. They see black people running and owning their own business. Here it's so hard to see because a lot of the times the African Americans that live in the Bay Area, a lot of them don't choose to give back. They don't want to give back. They have this mentality, I got mine, now let me get away from everybody else. And you know, they just go on and do what it is that they do. And I'm like, I still stay with my community. I stay supporting my community because my main business is the wine guy. That's predominantly a Caucasian world. Mm-hmm. And I bring African Americans up into the wine country and I take them on wine tours and I do that. And when I got into podcasting, when I started this, 3 years ago, it wasn't even a thing for African-Americans here. I jumped into something that people weren't doing. And you have to keep involving yourself so that you're growing with the times and being a part of what's going on, but you have to bring back the other people and help them and bring them up along the way with you so that the whole community learns and engages and empowers itself, not just one.
Right.
Not just one. So what do you look, what does it look like on the, what's a main goal that once we get through this, that you're going to focus on or are already focusing on for your main nonprofit and for your second nonprofit, for another piece?
So definitely for We Lead Ours, definitely we're looking at pretty much working towards the seed money to open up our own center. Right now we rent out office space and then we're contracted with schools and school district and stuff like that. While we still want to keep those contracts and stuff open, we have kids that come to summer camp from all over the Bay Area. We have kids that play football and the basketball from all over the Bay Area. And many of them don't go to where we have host our after school program at, are on our caseload for substance abuse harm reduction. So I want to make sure that we have a space to where we can always have enrichment programs going on in the community to where kids can come there any day of the week. And then make sure that we do all of the marketing and branding right to evolve our Mentor on the Fly program, which is the mentoring through life, basically, and to position that to start generate its own revenue so that we could do some of those things like, oh, you need 10,000, we got you. Don't take out that loan. Save that for your graduate work or whatnot. So definitely doing some things like that. And then personal, position myself to ink some of those speaking roles and evolve some curriculum and some tools that can be put on the Time to Dig Deep website to where people can click, interact with it, and learn, even if we be in a social distance space and I can't come out because of whatever. So thinking about all of that, how to evolve in this space, how to make sure that everybody on my team morale is up and nobody feel like, okay, we're going to quit because we can't do direct services the way that we used to do. How do we evolve the programming outside of that?
That's amazing. That is utterly, utterly amazing. I'm impressed.
Thank you very much.
Just like this young man that I met many, many years ago. Oh, many, many, many years ago. I'm old.
And you've donated to Wheelo, so you bought shirts off online, everything.
I support everybody. I try my best to support if I see somebody that's really doing something, because a lot of my stuff is community-based. My social group that I created over 10 years ago, we did backpack drives, we did all of that. And just the way that the face of social groups changed over time is just, but I've still kept back saying, hey, we got to support others. If we don't support others, right, who's going to do it?
Right, exactly.
If we don't do it, who's going to do it? So it has to be us. And I used to, one of the things I told my social group all the time is that $25 that you spend on this cocktails for one night, and that's cheap because most people spend way more than $25, but that would help one student. That's a backpack. Let's put that towards a backpack. Just one night, don't have cocktails. One night out the month. It won't kill you. You won't die.
Before we get off of here, if people didn't see it, they need to Google that revolt. They need to Puff Daddy revolt that he did last night, his TV show with Angela Rye and AOC. He had some people on there, and they really was talking about what's going on right now.
And so what station was that on? Because I didn't.
YouTube.
Oh, it was on YouTube.
YouTube, yep. So,
okay. So I looked to put that into the comments because I didn't watch it because I guess I didn't know about it either.
Yeah, it was good. I got a little message via Facebook and I was like, oh, let me go and check this out. This looks like it's going to be good. So it was talking about the things that mainstream media is not talking about, of how the history of viruses affects African Americans and where it comes from and stuff, like how we're at a disadvantage because of social, emotional, and economic disparities in the United States. So it was really good.
So now tell everybody, how do they reach you? How do they support? What do they need to do? Tell them everything.
You can visit We Lead Ours, WELEADOURS.org. And you can also visit time2digdeep.com. Both of those websites. You can find me on social media with the handle @WeLeadOurs, @MentoringOnTheFly, @TheBayAreaSeminoles, and then @D, Elegance, WELO. So all of them cool things. Or you can always call 510-409-8275 if you couldn't write any of all of those combinations of things down.
And all of that, just in case, for those of you that couldn't touch that, it will be in the footnotes of this show. And so you will be able to find him. I'm so honored that Dwayne had the time to come through and chat with us. He is a positive young man that you guys need to know. 101 black men in the Bay Area. Are you honoring him? Ooh, did I just call them out?
Well, actually, I've reached out to them in December. So I did reach out to them in December to get information, because that is the next organization that I plan on joining.
They should have been reaching out to you. So
I like the 100 black men. They have reached out to me before, but I didn't feel like it was time. And then they also did pay for me my senior year in high school to go on the 100 black college tour. So,
okay.
So they have supported.
I was going to go after Danny Williams.
They have supported.
They're coming hard for you. You know, Danny, I don't play.
They have supported. They're a good group of guys.
They're They're a good group of guys, definitely. So thank you so much. For those of you at home, once again, share. Tell a friend, all of that good stuff. Make sure you follow him and continue to listen to the Christopher Terrence Jones Show. Can we talk? Yes, we can. See you guys on the other side. Stay safe. Wash your hands. Do all that amazing stuff. Stay out of trouble and keep your asses in your damn houses. Hey, what's up, everybody? I just wanted to give a quick shout out to some amazing podcasts that I listen to. Check out Straight Up with Trent Shelton. Everybody knows The Read. We all listen to that. Don't forget the Fellas Point of View podcast, 10,000 Tacos, Swish Beats, Charmaine's World, For the Record with Angelina, Special Says, just a few, Apple, iHeart, wherever you listen to your podcast at. Go check them out now.